Hi, this is Marie Rogers with Sales Bart Talk, and I'm here with Jocelyn Verruti of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, who just competed in day two of Harbor Cup 2020. Jocelyn, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I hear that your team is unique in some way at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Mm-hmm. So what is unique about your sailing team?
So we are entirely student run. We do not have a coach. Our team is probably, we have probably like 50 to 80 dues paying members who are actually on our team, but most of those sailors are just there for fun. They're not there to race, so we have a really big group of people, but then we do have a smaller group that does get to compete. So it's really cool to see that that student run club then was able to make it to nationals 2 years ago. We made it in 2018. We qualified for nationals for the first time ever as Cal Poly, which was so amazing that we could do that as a student-run club. And it's just the support of this conference and the support of collegiate sailing in general has helped us do that. So it's been really special.
I'm so impressed, Jocelyn. Well, thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. I'm here with Patrick Wilkinson, skipper, and Devin Stapleton, trimmer of the University of Hawaii team, who have just competed in day two of Harbor Cup. Patrick, you as skipper, what are your impressions of the regatta so far?
Honestly, this is probably one of my favorite regattas. Like, everyone is so welcoming. Like, food is provided. It's the most fun regatta of the year, and we don't really get to do many big boat regattas as college sailors, so this one is really special because we pretty much only do big boat regattas against yacht club members in Hawaii, and so getting to do it against all the guys that we sail dinghies against is really a lot of fun. So I like it a lot.
Very cool. And Devin, you as trimmer, like, what are your impressions?
I was always told about this regatta from like older brother and just like older classmen, and they were saying like this was the best regatta, and I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then we come here and it's just exceeds all of our expectations. The food, like staying on the boats and getting to race big boats against all of our friends, which was really fun.
So this, I believe, is your seventh year at Harbor Cup for the school.
Yeah.
And for you, I think it's your third?
This is my second year.
Our second year.
Yeah, I did this 2 years ago, and then last year our team didn't do it. But yeah, this is my second year here.
And Devin, it's your first year.
This is my first.
Awesome. Okay, great. And how do you like competing on a Catalina 37?
For me, I love one design racing. That's like, I would just much rather sail one design than any other like PHRF rating boat. So, I mean, that aspect, I love the Catalina 37s because they're all matched boats. Everything's the same. And so it makes it really tight racing, especially with all the guys that I sail in college against. Like, everyone's really matched and really close. So a lot of fun with the tactics, for sure.
I want to thank you both for this interview. It was fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you in San Francisco, but around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It is Tuesday. We talk a little sail sport talk with our friend Karen Lyle in studio. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing excellent, Rick. Glad to be here.
Very good. And we're also very happy to have our in-studio guest, Will Stokely, who is here to talk about recruiting for the Clipper race as well. And Will, I understand you hail from the south coast of Blighty. Is it Cornwall, Devon, that area?
So I'm in Hampshire, so just across in Gosport, just across the water from Portsmouth. So,
okay.
Yeah, the heart of the British Navy, still there, and yeah, that's where the Clipper race is based.
That's great. I spent a lot of time in Hampshire, and I stayed in Fleet. I was also in Winchester for a while.
Great.
But when I think of the south coast, like Cornwall, I think of Ross Poldark and Doc Martin and the Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, yes.
That, do you say Mousehole or Mousel?
Oh, well, Mousel.
Mousel.
I would know that, yeah.
All right. That's when you know you're a local. Anyway, go ahead, Karen.
Will, you are a sailor who started out sailing in London, just, you know, around the buoys and so forth, and then decided to go for the first time on ocean racing and signed up for the Clipper race. What was that experience like for you the first time you were out there on that first leg of the Clipper race?
By the time you get to the first leg of the Clipper race, you've already done 4 weeks of training. So you've already had quite a long sort of preparation for it. And, you know, my training, I spread over about 2 years. So my whole build up to the Clipper race was this great long adventure as the excitement starts to build. So actually, by the time you you get on board for the first leg, you know, you feel, you know, your expectations are set, you've done a lot of training, so yeah, there's just the excitement of, okay, let's get out there and feel what it's going to be like now. But yeah, I remember my race started from Liverpool. We started racing directly off Albert Docks, and we headed racing out down the Mersey. And you know, you just feel, I guess you feel like how the adventurers used to feel when they were setting off, you know, not quite sure what they were going to get to. I mean, obviously we had a bit more knowledge about what it was going to be like, but you know, for us amateurs, that's still quite a big thing, knowing that we were going to be at sea for about 4 weeks before we arrived in South America.
Yes, sailing is part of our human history, time immemorial, and I just think about how great it is that you can do that. But people should know, this isn't for the rich and the elite. Amateurs can do this and get trained up for it, right?
Absolutely. So the race was set up back in the 1990s by Sir Robin Knox-Johnston, the first man to solo circumnavigate around the world back in 1969. He wanted to find a way to take the passion of ocean racing to a much broader range of people. You know, he was well aware there was the likes of the Whitbread race out there, but and you know, lots of people look at that and go, God, wouldn't it be fantastic? But I'm not professional, so I can't do it. But actually, Robin set up this race specifically to be something which anyone could aspire to. You have to have a certain level of fitness and agility. You have to have a certain capability to pass the training. But by and large, yeah, pretty much anyone can have a go at it. We have 18-year-olds. We have people in their 60s doing it. So for us, really, you know, physical agility and that the mental desire to do it is far more important than what your birth certificate says.
Mm-hmm. When you were on the second leg of your race, because one was not enough for you, obviously you're still with this, what was an experience that you had that you just didn't expect, that just perhaps even overwhelmed you with either awe or fear or whatever that might be?
Sure. So leg one, I did the first leg down to Uruguay, which is renowned as being tradewind sailing. It's a good warm-up leg. And by the end of it, I hadn't had the physical sort of sailing experience that I wanted. So I signed up to do leg six, which is the North Pacific. So, you know you're going to get big seas. You know it's going to be cold. You know it's going to be physically pretty challenging, you know, and those were all the things I wanted. I wanted to really be pushed out of my comfort zone. So I guess the first surprise I had on that race was the first 7 days were really, really benign. We had bizarrely calm weather. I've got some lovely photographs of just mirror calm water, and I was thinking, how, you know, this is not what I signed up for. So to start with, there was this disappointment that I wasn't getting this sort of big extreme conditions. But then, you know, crossing the Pacific, there's plenty of time for those conditions to kick in, and yeah, we were warned there was a storm coming in. We were the most northerly boat. We knew we were going to get hit hardest. So we had the boom lashed down on deck. We had our smallest sail up on the forestay. We had 100 knot winds, 15 meter seas. Oh. Yes, absolutely awe-inspiring. The sorts of conditions that you only ever really see on films that generally don't end well for the people in it. But, you know, we're on these fabulous boats. I had absolute faith in the boats. I had absolute trust in my skipper and my teammates. And that meant that you could sit there and just really take in these awe-inspiring views. And those are memories, absolutely, that I know I'm unlikely to ever experience again, but I've lodged them in my memory banks forever.
Well, Will Stokely is with us from Clipper Races. It's kind of a thing like, be careful what you wish for. Did you kind of think, well, maybe I'd like to go back to those calm seas right now?
No, I think if you could transport me back to any part of the race, it would be those huge seas.
Wow,
you know, it was
right?
Just such an incredible experience. You know, I wouldn't want to be there for weeks on end.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we had a 24-hour period of time where this weather was going to be coming through, so we knew it was going to come to an end. Mm. And I just had the confidence that I knew we were going to sail out of it. So, you know, I'd parked the fear that could be there and had, you know, consciously allowed myself to enjoy the experience.
I've never experienced 100 knot winds. I think the most has been 45 knots. What that drives the boat on its side and under the water, doesn't it? Or how did the boat handle that? I mean, describe that for me.
So for that period, we were mostly running downwind with it, so it wasn't coming at us on the beam. There was a period where the sail on the bow, you have good old fashioned brass hanks on these sails. You know, you don't have any flashy rolling forestays. You know, this is good old-fashioned sailing from that perspective. And every so often, these hanks would break, so you'd have to take the sail down. So there'd be a period of time where you would have no sails up. We clocked 14 knots under bare poles. So, you know, it's there's quite a lot of force going on there. But, you know, you have to be very careful about how you position the yacht. On board the yacht, sort of standing procedure is you have the helmsman and you always have someone next to them, a spotter who's there to help out if something goes wrong, or, you know, just to be there as a sort of second in command. In the big weather, we had a third spotter as well, looking backwards, calling the wave pattern coming in. Because you'd think in the middle of the Pacific, the waves would all, you know, that would all come in the same pattern, but they don't at all. So, yeah, you have someone calling those coming in. And you just need to make sure that you're positioning the boat right, so, you know, you're not going to be put sideways on a wave. So, yeah, it's exciting, but you have to keep your wits about you. You know, you cannot afford to relax at any time.
Were there any other moments of peril? Did you ever find yourself in the ocean?
No. There were moments where it's pretty hairy. You know, we had a bit of a knockdown. And at the time, that's obviously hugely, you know, exciting. Not necessarily in a good way at the time, but again, it's over fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're trained for when that happens, and you've got people around you who you trust. So you just sort of, you know, adrenaline kicks in. Sure. You get on with it, and it's fun to then look back on it and go, wow, that was amazing.
What about the Cape? Because we always hear about Cape Horn and how horrible that is.
So I've not done Cape Horn. So on leg three, they sail from Cape Town to Australia. So they go around Good Hope.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's then heading down into the Southern Ocean. So, you know, they get some big conditions there as well. So leg three is another one of the big sort of adrenaline races. But our race doesn't actually go around Good Hope.
Hmm. Now, this particular race that's happening right now, Wendy Tuck is one of the captains for that. And there are 11 boats, I believe.
There are 11 identical 70-foot yachts, yes.
And it started out in London. It went down to, tell us the journey.
Okay, so it set off from London on the 1st of September last year, and they sailed for 7 days and stopped off in Portimao. So they had a sort of a short warm-up sail from that perspective. Then they set off from Portimao and sailed the length of the Atlantic down to Punta del Este in Uruguay. From Uruguay, they then set off on leg two across the South Atlantic to Cape Town. From Cape Town, they headed across the Southern Ocean to Fremantle in Australia. Then leg four is a coast-to-coast one around Australia, around the south of Tasmania, getting into Airlie Beach at the top of the eastern coast of Australia. From there, the race should have gone from Airlie Beach to Sanya in China, and then we were going to have two short races from Sanya to Subic Bay in the Philippines, and then Subic Bay to Zhuhai. But of course, that's the area of the world they're in at the moment. But obviously, with the coronavirus kicking in, halfway through the race to China, they got redirected and raced into Subic Bay. And they've been doing some circular racing from Subic Bay. And then in about a week or so's time, they'll set off from Subic Bay and head to the west coast of the USA, going into Seattle. You know, so we've had to miss out our three Chinese stops, which is obviously a great shame for the race. We've got three fantastic Chinese sponsors. They sponsor the port, and they also have a yacht each. So it's been, you know, been a great loss for us not to be able to visit their home ports. You know, such is the nature when there's something like the virus going on.
Yeah. What is the way you adjudicate the race? Is there a governing body that's behind it?
So the race is, it is its own independent race. Each of the teams is made up of the amateur sailors. Some will have signed up to do the whole race, and others will sign up to do one leg, two legs. You know, you can sign up to do as much of the race as you want. The race is very much about the involvement of taking part. So
there a trophy?
There is a trophy at the end. so you are racing for the glory of having your team name on the trophy. But you know, it is an independent race, and it's all about taking part rather than being for a prize at the end. But of course, everyone wants the glory of being on the sure. podium at the end and having their name associated with winning.
Having some pots and pans at the end.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, and you're out recruiting people to amateurs to join you in this race. In the stories of people that you've met that have gone on the race, is there something that you can share with us that just stands out?
I am now employed by Clipper to get people onto the race. But that's not why I get people on the race. I get people on the race because I just had such an amazing experience and I want to other people to be able to experience that. So, you know, I love chatting to people who come along and you know, they're looking to do something different. They're, you know, whether they're experienced sailors and they're really wanting to push their experience, or when they've never sailed before and they're just looking to have this great adventure, and the training is a big part of that. Yeah, various people come to mind. Alan O'Brien was an 18-year-old who sailed around Australia. She finished the race and has now gone back to school to complete her A-levels in the next month or two. So I think that's pretty cool. Someone who's managing to fit the race into their school time rather than waiting until they finish school. So, you know, that's notable. Lots of people say last night at South Beach Yacht Club, we met up with Rajani, who's Indian by birth, been in America for the last 20 years. And I interviewed her about a year ago, and she was doing it to prove to herself, I think primarily, but to a certain extent, you know, proving to everyone else that you know, she was willing to push herself, you know, beyond the normal limits. And I had a chat with her a week or two before she joined the race, because she was really having a bit of a crisis of confidence, and you know, I wasn't quite sure whether she was going to drop out, but you know, I reminded her why she was doing it, and she went ahead with it. And I just, seeing her last night, seeing the joy in her face and seeing the pride in her husband's face, was just amazing to see how someone who was not a sailor is now, you know, has now got 4,000 ocean miles in their logbook and is, you know, a really very accomplished sailor with something on their logbook that an awful lot of people would love to have.
That's amazing. We just have about 30 seconds left, and this show goes all over the United States, Canada, and Mexico as well. Someone's interested. How do they contact you about this?
So if they go on to the website, cliparoundtheworld.com, the best way actually is if you go to the key events page. We run webinars about every 2 weeks. Mm. So you can join up, listen to a webinar. You can ask questions on that. So it's just a really nice way of finding out about the race from the comfort of your own armchair. Also on the apply page, fill in the document to get a brochure sent to you, and we can send you either an electronic copy of the brochure, or we can put a hard copy in the post to you. But do get in contact, and we'd love to chat to you.
There he is, Will Stokely. Thank you for your time. Karen, thank you as well.
Thank you for coming, Will.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. Well, come on back on Sports Byline.